The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's already Friday, the last show of a very busy and productive week here at Edstone, here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And I'm sure lots and lots of activity going on at God's headquarters, his headquarters work in Edmond, Oklahoma. On today's show, we'll, if we have some time at the end, we'll try to race through a few emails that have come in over the last few days in response to the Trumpet Brief. And also to this program. And coming up here in just a bit, also we'll play a soundbite from President Trump, a speech he gave yesterday, where he refers to America's birthright of all things. An interesting comment for sure. We'll look into that here in just a second. And also coming up later in the show, we'll follow up on the media double standard that we discussed yesterday on the program. Well, today could be the day that the Republicans or the Trump administration release this controversial memo that evidently discusses the surveillance abuses by the FBI, the DOJ, the spying, basically, the spying on the Trump administration, the incoming Trump administration by President Obama and his staff, or his administration anyway. And, of course, the Democrats are raising all kinds of objections. They are crying foul, saying that the memo was adjusted or there were details changed by Chairman Nunez, I think his name is. In any event, we'll see if it makes news today. The FBI is also protesting. They feel like it's going to expose things that that really should be kept confidential. In any event, I just want to, in light of this story, it hasn't broken yet. We don't know exactly what the memo says, but in anticipation of it, I just want to remind you again of two of our more popular booklets from the last few years, America Under Attack. That's one of them. Came out in 2013, I believe. America Under Attack, and of course, Great Again. We've talked some this week about the past two administrations heading up the United States of America. One president typed by the ancient Antiochus, and then now the current occupant of the White House, a Jeroboam type. And these two are very different, very different. We had this article, I think this was the day before the election, November 7th, 2016, and Abraham Blondeau went through some important history, again, tying in Great Again, America Under Attack. And he just talked about the previous 8 years. I mean, these were the last days of Barack Obama leading the United States. And Abraham, in his article, talked at length about the impact this Antiochus administration had on America. And you know, all the promises coming in and the radical leftist political philosophy. The vow to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And in his article, Abraham talks about the ancient Antiochus and how that he hated the rule of law. He hated it. And the same was true in this end time. You saw a lot of abuses during that eight-year administration, undermining the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, the guarantor of Americans' freedoms. And that really was a target of the radical left for those 8 years. They went after the Constitution, the rule of law, the very law that, of course, the president swears to uphold, to defend, to protect and preserve. In that article that we posted the day before the election, here again, Abraham referred to America Under Attack. my father's booklet from several years ago. And quoting my father, it says here, the Obama administration is taking actions just about every week that raise constitutional questions and that threaten to undermine America's foundational document. Okay, so that's from 2013, about halfway into the Obama administration. Undermining America's foundational doctrine. And then Abraham says here, the president has sought to dissolve the separation of powers by circumventing Congress and acting as chief executive and chief legislator. No other president in U.S. history has expanded the powers of executive so quickly and effectively. Now, in the Great Again booklet, there was the, I think the first version that came out in 2016, and then the one the following year, early on in 2017. Again, my father refers back to some of this history with the Antiochus administration. He says, when he became president, Barack Obama promised his supporters a radical transformation of the U.S. He says further, Mr. Obama is an outspoken critic of the Constitution and has long desired to cast off its restraints. I mean, these are quotes. These are things that Barack Obama has said in his past. I mentioned yesterday these connections that he's had with the likes of Louis Farrakhan, of all people. Melanie Phillips had a great piece today, by the way, saying that why should anybody be surprised by that photo from 2005? Given all of the associations and the connections that were fully exposed, but that people just turned a blind eye to. Well, my father wrote in Great Again, do you realize how deadly dangerous this trend of lawlessness is? He says, very few people do, but it gives insight into the real nature of the threat facing America. And then he said this, and this is about the Obama administration. This is quickly moving America toward a race war and rule by dictatorship or tyranny. Tyranny, tyrannical acts, anti-law, anti-rule of law. That's where all of this was leading. And my father was trying to highlight the supreme danger that America is facing. And so whatever comes from this memo, I mean, should we be surprised that an Antiochus administration was spying on an incoming administration or an administration or a candidate that was trying to win the presidency? It'll be interesting to see what comes of this. I mean, I've been talking this week about the division, the hateful division, irreconcilable differences. You see it. The divide couldn't be any wider. Just to conclude with Abraham Blondeau's piece from November 7th, 2016. He said, this is, again, the day before the election of Donald Trump. And, of course, everyone on the Obama side was hoping for Hillary to win the election. In fact, everyone on the day of the election was saying it's a done deal. Hillary's got this in the bag. And what a shock that day was for so many people in America on the left and the right. But Abraham says here, America has been under attack for 8 years. Whoever wins the election faces a domestically and internationally dismantled America. Whoever wins will also inherit powers that far exceed what the Constitution permits. No matter what policy is taken, the damage has been done, and no human leader can offer solutions. It says, as Antiochus exits the stage, a new actor will lead the tragedy. See, like the point my father makes in Great Again, no human being is going to bail out America. I mean, there's some vast differences between Antiochus and Jeroboam. And some of those differences you're seeing today, for the everyday American, I'm sure it's refreshing just to hear how a president talks about America so positively, when for so many years it was so negative and so many apologies. President Trump spoke yesterday, by the way, at I think this was a gathering of Republicans in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Notice what he said. Again, you talk about a contrast between his administration and his and the previous one. This is clip one.
And there's one more very important promise we're keeping. No longer are we making apologies for America. We don't apologize anymore. We're proud of our history. We're confident in our values, and we're grateful to our heroes.
And you can see why. There's quite a few people that that heard that State of the Union address the other night and thought, "Wow, this is pretty good. I like it." 75% or so came away from that with a favorable opinion. And then he says things like this, what you just heard there. He said that yesterday in front of his fellow Republicans. Look, we're proud of our history. We're confident in our values. And we're grateful to our heroes. That's a very different message than what most Americans had been hearing for 8 years. But then there was this comment, as I say, him referring to America's birthright. I mean, that caught our attention here as we were pulling together some clips earlier today. Here's clip two.
We are restoring the bonds of love and loyalty that unite us all as friends, as neighbors, as citizens, as Americans. Because when Americans are united, nothing at all, nothing can stop us. We win. As I said the other night, we are a nation that built the Empire State Building in 1 year. Actually, to be exact, we built it in less than a year. Would you believe it? Working 24 hours around the clock. We built the Hoover Dam in record time. We built the Golden Gate Bridge. We linked our nation together with railroads and highways. We dug out the Panama Canal. We're the nation that won two world wars, defeated fascism and communism, and put satellites into space and planted our great American flag on the face of the moon. We've healed the sick, cured disease, and cared for the poor like no other nation. We've lifted millions into prosperity and delivered millions into freedom. This is our legacy. This is our birthright. And this is the foundation on which we build our very glorious future. Because together, we are indeed making America great again.
Some similar themes to what he spoke about on Tuesday night. Here again, you've got to give him credit. It's a positive view of history. I gave a program on that a couple of weeks ago. At least it's a positive view of the history. But as I said in response to the lecture or the speech the other night, there's a lot of taking credit for it ourselves. We did this. We healed the sick. And then he says, this is our birthright. Isn't that interesting language? Considering what Herbert Armstrong taught in the United States and Britain in prophecy, considering what it says in Genesis 48, I mean, America has been the recipient of birthright promises. That's the thing, but they all came from God. God's the one who gave us this wealth. God's the one who gave us this prosperity. It wasn't brought on by our own doing. We've had articles in the Trumpet or at the website before talking about, I mean, just basics of, well, what if American settlers would have settled into, the heart of Russia or somewhere like that? Just the geographical difference. But here we settled into this breadbasket for the world. God orchestrated all of it. And then even the breakaway from England, from Great Britain, or what would become Great Britain. A remarkable story, as we were discussing some this morning in our editorial meeting. You see God's hand all throughout my father, he has the booklet, of course, Great Again, but he gave a program on this same subject. Again, talking about who receives credit for this past greatness. That's what the president was talking about there yesterday in West Virginia. I mean, there's no doubt. There's no doubt when you look at the construction projects and the Panama Canal and the satellites in space and defeating fascism and setting foot on the moon and curing diseases and such. There's no doubt. I mean, that is quite a legacy. Birthright promises certainly factor in. Listen here to what my father said. This is from December 2016, clip 3.
First of all, we have to understand that men didn't make America great in the first place, nor did they make Britain great in the first place. God did that. Those are the two birthright nations that we talk about. And if you don't understand about who the birthright nations are and who Israel is, you need to write and request our book by phone, if you can, whatever way you want to request it, you just about can do that. But it is the United States and Britain in prophecy, and we offer it all the time. But God is what is the one that should be given credit for that, and we don't really give God credit for that today, but this new book of mine will explain that to you and show you why what these commentators and writers are talking about is really just slightly getting into the issue that we need to get into, and that is looking to God.
Looking to God, he said in 2016, promoting his new book there, Great Again. Who's going to make us great again? And who made us great in the past? As he brought out there, we don't really give God credit. We don't thank God. We're not grateful for all of the promises that he fulfilled. He did promise it to Abraham. You can see the story in Genesis 12 and Genesis 17 and Genesis 22. And on it goes. He said, I'm going to make you a great nation and a multitude of nations. God said it. God made those promises to one man. And then you move ahead in the story. Abraham, Isaac, then Jacob. Genesis 48 and verse 5, it says, and now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto you in the land of Egypt before I came unto you into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. These two sons of Joseph, Israel, or Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, he adopted them as his own sons so he could pass the birthright on to them. Ephraim and Manasseh. This is in your Bible. This is in the first book of the Bible. How do we come upon these birthright promises? What is America's birthright, after all? Down in verse 14, this is Genesis 48, it says, and Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly. For Manasseh was the firstborn. He crossed his arms because the younger would actually become the big empire. But the oldest would become the world's greatest superpower, the world's greatest single nation in history. God brought this about. And he blessed Joseph, and he said, go before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life, long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil. Bless the lads. Bless these two lads, Ephraim and Manasseh. And let my name be named on them. Israel, his name was. Israel. And so who took on the name Israel? Primarily Ephraim and Manasseh. Not little Judah. Not the Jews that returned to Israel during the Restoration. Not the Jews that are there today. Well, I mean, they're Israelites. when you look at the, you know, the nation Israel or the people of Israel as all 12 tribes, but the two, Ephraim and Manasseh, the birthright was theirs. The scepter promise was made to Judah. The birthright, Ephraim and Manasseh, it's all there. Of course, there's much, much more to say on this that's covered in the United States and Britain in prophecy. Israel's name stamped upon Ephraim and Manasseh. Mr. Armstrong wrote, this is in the U.S. and Britain, "Thus it is that many of the prophecies about Israel or Jacob do not refer to Jews or to any of the nations that are today descendants of the other tribes of Israel. Mark that well. Few indeed are the clergymen, theologians, or professed Bible scholars who know that today. Many refuse to know it. Together, the descendants of these two lads, Ephraim and Manasseh, were to grow into the promised multitude, the nation and company of nations. These national blessings are poured upon them jointly. These are the collective blessings which the lads received, which the lads together received, but not the other tribes." And so all of these prophecies, they don't refer to the Jews or to any, unless the prophecies refer to Judah, of course. But these prophecies about Israel, they refer to Ephraim and Manasseh primarily. Now, when you look at prophecies like Hosea 5, verse 5, it talks about all three of our nations, Ephraim, Manasseh, that's Israel, and Judah, all three of them together. They're going to fall at once. And as my father's written before, the reason God is so upset, the reason he's so wrathful toward our nations is because we received all the blessings. We've received all these wonderful blessings and benefits. In the case of Ephraim and Manasseh, we've received all of the birthright promises. This is our legacy. This is our birthright, the president said yesterday. Well, we've received the most blessings of all. But what have we done with them? And look at how we're just mired in sin. The worst of sins. Leading the world. Actively promoting the ways of the devil. The ways of sin. Spreading it around the world. Using our fabulous technology to spread these sins far and wide. Our nations have, well, additionally, they've rejected the message, the warning, the truth that God gave to this world through Herbert Armstrong. I went through Matthew 24 today in class, where it talked about the gospel of the kingdom of God going around the world. And then after that, it says in Matthew 24:14, then the end came. And now we've seen so much destruction and devastation, an abomination of desolation, right across the spiritual landscape of Israel, spiritual Israel. And now we see national Israel going down fast. Here again, this is discussed in America Under Attack. Satan's primary targets, spiritual and physical Israel. These three nations, these nations that have had a history with God, and yet were so ungrateful, were so unthankful. Ingratitude, as Herbert Armstrong said so often, it's perhaps our greatest sin. But going back to this history, listen to what Mr. Armstrong said in 1980 about these two, these brothers. The big colony, Ephraim, was to lose the United States, descended from co-birthright holder Manasseh. The United States became the one promised great nation. Britain became the great commonwealth of nations. And then listen to this. This is, again, like I say, when you compare and contrast, it's somewhat refreshing to hear the president today at least talk about positive things. But he doesn't bring this out. Mr. Armstrong said, neither Britain nor America deserved the unprecedented wealth, greatness, and national power of Abraham's birthright, but God had promised it unconditionally to Abraham. It was conditional to ancient Israel. Though our two great peoples did not deserve it, God was bound and kept his promise. He made it conditional in ancient Israel. And they didn't receive these promises because of their many sins. And so God delayed. He delayed the distribution of these blessings until our time, or these latter days, or the early 1800s, when all of this phenomenal wealth, I mean, God just poured it upon our people, the United States and Britain, national wealth, power, greatness, all because of what's promised in the first book of the Bible. Now, the point Mr. Armstrong makes in the United States and Britain in prophecy is that once God fulfilled his promise, he kept his promise. Britain went on to become the greatest empire in history. The United States, the greatest single superpower. Once God kept his promise, then it was on us to hold on to those blessings, to preserve that wealth and power and prosperity. If we disobeyed God's laws, however, those blessings would be squandered away. And so that's what we see happening. Well, my father said, this is, I think it's actually from that same program. I should have brought the clip. The Great Again program, he says, first of all, we have to understand that men didn't make America great in the first place. That actually may be from the clip that we played. Men didn't do it. They didn't make men, or rather America, great in the first place. They didn't make Britain great. It's God who did it. It's God that deserves the credit. It's God that we need to give thanks and praise to. And like my father has explained, I mean, once we acknowledge this and turn back to the God who made America great in the first place, then we can begin the process of overcoming our problems, of healing the division and the hatred in the land. It's the only way. It's the only way for America to be great again. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I was reading a little bit last night about the farewell address of George Washington in 1796, I believe it was. And it was just pretty amazing reading it, just given some of the sound bites that we've been playing this week and considering the, well, even the one I played in the first segment, but some of the highlights, too, from the State of the Union address the other night, with President Trump making a strong appeal for both sides to come together. And he keeps saying, look, if we come together, we can do anything. If we're unified, we can do anything. And it's amazing just how much of that farewell address from America's first president, it's amazing how much of it was devoted to the need for national unity. I mean, this was George Washington moving on. I mean, this new government had been set up, an experiment in the history of mankind. And he could have crowned himself king. He could have been emperor. He had that much power during the Revolution, during the early years of the new United States. But he stepped aside, and then he pens this farewell address with the help of some of his assistants, telling America that you're now on your own. We've won our independence. The foundation has been laid. And now you've got to do your part. And we've got to stay together, just like that Continental Army stayed together, fighting against all the odds, it seemed. Quite a bit, as I say, devoted to the need for national unity. I mean, this bitter partisanship that we see today, it's not like America hasn't seen it before. Washington saw it in his day. But he saw just how destructive it would be, ultimately, if both sides didn't come together. So many powerful points made in that wonderful document, certainly one of the three most famous documents in American history, the farewell address, the bit that we so often refer to, the religion and morality quote, Washington saying, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Indispensable. I mean, you can't get rid of these. These are the foundational building blocks of a strong, prosperous nation. You take these away and you have nothing left to stand on. Washington said, in vain would that man claim tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. You try to subvert this foundation, religion and morality, you're going to undermine the entire nation, the whole experiment. I mean, look, he wasn't alone, of course. You can read it in our booklet, Character in Crisis. All of them said this. The key to our greatness and success depends on what we do morally. Depends upon how religious we are as a people. They knew. I mean, they knew all these freedoms, the restrictions that were going to be put upon government. They knew that with the freedoms that Americans would enjoy, that they had to be, well, guided and restricted and directed by God's truth or God's word, or at least the morality of the Bible. It's not that they understood God's purpose and plan for man, that he's reproducing himself, but they certainly understood that you throw away religion and morality and you're a nation without a foundation. He also warned in this same address that if the Constitution ever eroded, or if the forces to undermine the rule of law became too powerful, we'd lose those precious liberties, those freedoms that we fought for. He says here, it is indeed little else than a name where the government is too feeble to withstand the enterprises of faction, to confine each member of the society within the limits prescribed by the laws, and to maintain all in the secure and tranquil enjoyment of the rights of person and property. Washington says, I have already intimated to you the danger of parties in the state, the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetrated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. But this leads at length to a more formal and permanent despotism. The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual. And sooner or later, the chief of some prevailing faction, more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns this disposition to the purposes of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. Unless we're a unified people, unless we're a moral people, you're just going to open yourself up to tyranny, despotism. Again, go back and look at what my father says in America Under Attack and Great Again. It's pretty amazing. It's also sobering. It's corrective. It should be. Going back to the founding father of the United States of America. He said further on, the unity of government which constitutes you one people is also now dear to you. It is justly so, for it is a main pillar in your real independence. Well, I read part of that a moment ago, but this is the key to our safety, our prosperity, our tranquility. Some wonderful history. We're hoping to get into more of that. Well, not this specific history, but history in general, following on that program from a couple weeks ago. The positive view of history, God's view of history, that example I used about God viewing the throne of David, the coming rule of Jesus Christ to this earth. I mean, when you see it from God's perspective, when you put God in his rightful place, right in the center, there's so much to rejoice about. There's so much to be excited about and to anticipate, even with all the ruin we see around us. I mean, that's brought on by man and the sins of man, our rebellion against God. That's why we're facing these kinds of problems. And now here today, perhaps, another memo comes out. More division, more hatred, more name-calling, more accusation. Even as we see so many other problems right around the world, problems that we ignore We won't watch like the Bible says to do. Watch and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape. I mean, that's what your Bible says. You better be watching world events. You better keep your eyes open to the truth. Bless him who reads and understands, like it says in Matthew 24. Revelation 1 makes the same point. A few of these news items that we had stack up today. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, I quoted from him yesterday or the day before. But he's talking about the messy Brexit negotiations and how that the Franco-German axis is determined to make a soft arrangement impossible. He writes, any further talking at this point wastes time and tightens the noose around our own necks. And then listen to this. This is his own experience with his writing, with his work in years past. My experience as Brussels correspondent and then later covering the Eurozone crisis taught me that Germany usually succeeds in imposing its will, disguising its power behind French camouflage and the EU institutions. But it's Germany calling the shots. It's Germany imposing its will. Look at where this is leading. I mean, we've been here before. As I was saying in class this morning, you can set aside prophecy if you will, but what does history teach us about a strong and powerful Germany, about a resurgent and powerful Russia? And then the United States and Britain, its weakness. We talked this morning about the British, well, I was going to say empire, Britain's inability to even fund a small army. It's just one article after another. Sam's keeping a folder of it. He can't keep track of all of them. It's every single week. Not enough funding for this. Breakdown over here. We need more recruits here. And meanwhile, these ascendant powers, bitter division. I talked yesterday about the problem in the media, the double standard. The Federalist brought this out, some of the same points that we discussed yesterday. I'm just saying that, you know, this picture of Barack Obama with Louis Farrakhan, and what would happen? How would the media react if Donald Trump was snapped in a photo from years ago with his arm around a white supremacist, a member of the KKK? Do you think they'd sit on that for 13 years? You think they'd try to hide that? I mean, the point that this guy makes at the Federalist is that, okay, Barack Obama's come and gone, and I suppose it's old news now, but the Congressional Black Caucus is still around. The CBC, I mean, they're the ones that hid the truth. They're the ones that buried the photo. And they're the ones now protesting Donald Trump's speeches, walking out in some cases, saying that Donald Trump is a racist. What about all their activities with Louis Farrakhan? It's an ugly double standard. The media gets in there and just makes matters worse. Few people have the courage to call them out. There aren't that many people like Melanie Phillips. She looked at the Farrakhan photo and thought, well, why are people surprised by this? You have Khalidi, you have Jeremiah Wright, you have Bill Ayers. Yeah, Louis Farrakhan fits right in the same boat with all of them. So what's so surprising? It says, one day before Obama was elected president in 2008, this is Melanie Phillips, I noted on my blog that a former Farrakhan top deputy, Dr. Vibert White Jr., had said Obama's ties to the Farrakhan movement in Chicago ran deep, and that for many years they had maintained an open line to discuss policy and strategy. So she was reporting it. She was talking about it. But who paid attention? Who listened to what she was saying in 2008? I can recall a big article we put together for the Trumpet. All those troubling associations. that then Senator Obama had with Jew haters, anti-Israel, anti-American. It says, from the time Obama first came to national prominence, there was ample evidence that his worldview and social and professional associations, including Farrakhan, indicated he posed a danger, and a danger to America, the rule of law, and the state of Israel. I wrote about this repeatedly, and so did we. And who did so? All who did so, however, were brushed aside and told we were racist for criticizing Obama. This was because of the left-wing doctrine that black people are intrinsically powerless and so could never be responsible for bad deeds. They get a pass. Not so with the other side. It says this unchallengeable orthodoxy gave rise not just to black power militancy, but the whole anti-racism movement, which has turned truth and justice inside out. Truth, again, is what is cast to the ground. Isaiah 59. Carolyn Glick has a long piece as well that's worth getting into. She's talking about the Trump administration's decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem. And then the Palestinian Authority's response to that, basically calling off any and every negotiation, and basically saying the Americans have disqualified themselves. I mean, they're attacking American delegations, trying to get into Ramallah, just to talk to the Palestinian leadership. They're burning effigies of President Trump and other U.S. officials, as she brings out in her article. I mean, the sentiment in among the Palestinian people, it's a strong anti-American sentiment, as strong as any nation in the world. And as she says, this happens to be the nation that gives the Palestinians more assistance financially than any other nation. And in fact, from America's side, America gives more assistance to the Palestinians than any other country except Israel. All of this money, tens of billions of dollars. And the U.S. is the problem. There's a spirit behind this. And of course, it's setting the stage, isn't it, for Europe to come in and to play the role of peacemaker. We had an article at the Trumpet just today or yesterday. Can Europe broker peace in the Middle East? I mean, right now it would seem that the Americans and the Israelis are as close as ever because of Trump's announcements of recent weeks. But they're plotting, they're strategizing in Europe. They're plotting and strategizing in Ramallah. They want the U.S. out, and they want Germany and the EU in. Callum Wood has a long piece at thetrumpet.com about this very thing. Read Carolyn Glick's if you get a chance today. Hopefully we can link to it somewhere on the site. But Callum does a great job pulling it all together as well. Richard Palmer gave me a Jerusalem Post piece this morning about the EU saying that, hey, America, you can't solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict alone. We've got to be involved. I mean, we're not shutting you out, not yet. But you can't shut us out. And then how about this headline from the EU Observer? EU diplomats plot against Trump on Jerusalem. They're actively working to undermine the United States position, as is half of America. You know, as we had in that program the other day, former Secretary of State John Kerry, holdovers from the Obama administration. I mean, is it really any surprise that you would have corruption in the DOJ or at the FBI? And again, there's some critics, of course, that would say you don't want to criticize those institutions that you preside over. But that said, you look at the 8 years previous to President Trump's arrival, an Antiochus-like administration. And just like my father wrote, undermining the Constitution and the rule of law, and then using government agencies like the IRS to persecute political opponents. That's history. That's recent history. It's right there for all to see. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails that have come in recent days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
A few emails here to conclude with today's program. This one, I think, in response to some of the ones we had late last week about Jordan Peterson, the individual that has talked about masculinity and stepping up as young men to be leaders, and just the controversial message that he has, a message that shouldn't even be controversial. In any event, one of our listeners says, after listening to your two programs on the trend of perpetual adolescence in the male population, I happened to be reading the wonderful book Biblical Manhood this morning and came across the perfect quote to punchline your programs. It said, the transition from boyhood to manhood is largely a transition from taking to giving. That's from Joel Hilliker's book, Biblical Manhood. You can get a copy of that online at thetrumpet.com website. Just go over to the literature tab and search for Biblical Manhood. The transition, it says, from boyhood to manhood is largely a transition from taking to giving. As this listener says, so simple and yet so profound. As I meditated on it, I thought about the path of conversion, which turns us from the way of self to the way of God. And then I was struck by the thought that, once again, it all goes back to the two trees. This world is operating in Satan's tree, which is fundamentally get, self-oriented. And we are tasked to come out of this world and to live in God's tree of life, God's way of life, which is all about an outflowing, loving concern for others. She says here, naturally, Satan wants to keep young males as infants or acting like infants so that they do not mature and come out of the way of self, and are therefore also incapable to lead anyone else into the way of give. So some good thoughts there from one of our listeners down in Australia. She says, finally, Owen, good on Jordan Peterson. How refreshing to see a man stand up and speak what he can see are the true facts. Thank you for your support, your team, and for the great programs. Several responses here from my father's Trumpet Brief at the end of last week. It says here, I enjoy reading your newsletter, and I'm struggling to overcome my sinful ways. I'm about to read your booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. I find reading about the good news about God's kingdom is very inspiring. I'm changing my life a little at a time, and I'm very saddened when I know I'm falling short of the Lord's commandments. He goes on to ask what it is we can suggest and how to achieve this or overcome. And of course, he's on the right track with that booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. But just stay with it. It takes faith to obey God. It takes God's help and power as well, Draw on that power and strength. Intensify your prayers, your studies. Dig into God's word. Watch and pray, as Jesus said. And God will give you the strength that you need to overcome and to conquer. Thanks for this trumpet brief, another one says. I now plan to review Hebrews right away. What God has been doing over this past year, from my perspective, has been absolutely dazzling. I'll pray for the event in Houston. People surely need it. And then one last one here says, I'm delighted to hear about the campaign in Houston. Delighted that our work is getting more exciting. I really want to thank you for staying in health for the work's sake and for all the energy and all that you yourself have poured into our Father's business. Some good responses there to my Father's program, or rather to his trumpet brief from last week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're putting the finishing touches on yet another week of broadcasting here at kpcg.fm. Send us your emails, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.